The past decade was the hottest on record, just the latest in a series of record-breaking decades since the 1960s, each one hotter than the last. Scientists agree that rising greenhouse gas emissions are the cause. The thing is, around a third of those emissions come from the production of food for the world's growing population. The biggest share from agriculture and land use. So what can a small country like Denmark do about it? Stay tuned to find out. Welcome to the Food Nation podcast. I'm Kath Mersch. You know, when you pinpoint Denmark on the map of the world, it can be hard to imagine a major impact on global climate. The truth is, Danish food and agriculture innovation has a lot to offer a climate-neutral and climate-resilient future. In this episode, we'll meet three of the biotechnology companies that are improving the efficiency and sustainability of crop and livestock farming with their solutions for soil, seeds and harvest residues. We'll also talk about a radical new approach to protein production. The companies in question are two world leaders, Novozymes and DLF, and Steesdale, a rising star. As a company that first made a name for itself with enzymes for leather, textiles and laundry detergents, it wasn't exactly written in the stars that Novozymes would one day be a top name in biological solutions for agriculture. Today, the company's microbial solutions protect crops, boost yields, and improve the health of the soil. And there's a huge focus on solutions to prepare agriculture for climate change and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Novozymes' state-of-the-art innovation campus is in Lyngby on the outskirts of Copenhagen. Hans Klingenberg is vice president for the agricultural and industrial business.
Most of us don't really hear about Novozymes on a day-to-day basis, but we are essentially a company that makes bio-based products. Those products replace chemistry and fossil-based inputs to create greener solutions that hopefully drive, you could say, a greener and healthier planet. We also produce quite a few ingredients for the food space, essentially to try to create healthier and more nutritious food options. And about 20 years ago, we started looking at the bioag space. We ended up buying a company that worked in the bioag area. This was a pretty small business, privately owned. You could call it a little bit of a mom and pop shop. Since then, we ended up acquiring another 7 companies in that space because it was a pretty fragmented area. And that essentially formed the basis for the bioag business that we have today, which has grown quite significantly since then.
The original products in Novozymes' bioag range were inoculants. These are basically microbes that coexist with crops like peas, lentils and soybeans, all of them protein-rich pulses characterized by the nodules on their roots, where the microbes both find a home and make key nutrients in the soil available to the plants.
All of those crops from nature are used to existing with a microbe on their roots. And so as we began industrial farming, what farmers were finding is that when they were plowing up the fields, they were disrupting that natural microbiome. And it was then found that if you added back those microbes, you reestablished the microbe population that those plants needed to truly thrive and grow more healthy. That's where we've really done a lot to evolve from the initial products to where we are today. If you look back to the initial products, it was a very basic question. Hey, we don't have the microbes on the field anymore. Let's just stick back the microbes that we found before. Today, it's a much more complex farming environment. We're trying to cater for a world where farmers are using different inputs like chemical fertilizers. They're using different pesticides. They're sometimes farming organically. They're farming on very different soil types. And so increasingly, we have tried to figure out what would be the absolute best biology for a given soil type, for a given crop, for a given environment. So you're trying to maximize the microbiome, if you will, to a very specific parcel of land. So where in the old days, it might have been one size fits all, more and more we're looking at you could say, more tailored solutions that have been evolved to specifically support a given crop or soil environment. And that's becoming increasingly important with climate change, actually, because now where we start seeing things like drought or more variance in precipitation, then it becomes more and more important to create a situation where plants have a healthy base, if you will, that reduces their risk of stress. Now, the benefits to the farmer then is, A, I can potentially dose less fertilizer because now my plant is simply healthier and growing faster by itself. So it actually drives quite a bit of yield, crop yield for the farmer. The other piece is, if I have a healthier plant, I can likely reduce also my pesticide usage, which is something I think we all desire to see in the modern agricultural system.
Novozymes inoculants for plant health have become recognized as the international gold standard. Now the BioAg team is working on answers to more farm challenges.
In particular, we've begun to ask the question, can we use different products to actually not just reduce, but really bring down the level of chemical fertilizers that are used on the field? Can the microbes, in other words, take the place of those chemical fertilizers and be a substitute? And we've actually found that some of the microbes have a very important role in playing in either helping to grab nitrogen from the air or release phosphorus from the soil. And we think there's a path where you can start bringing down the amount of chemical fertilizer that's being used on the field today. Now, we can't eliminate chemical fertilizer, but we can probably bring it down by, say, 10-15% with current technology. And then the question is, what can we do to continue to evolve that technology to increasingly bring down the use of chemical fertilizer? And you say, why does that matter? Well, it matters because chemical fertilizer, in particular nitrogen, is the single biggest input when it comes to climate footprint on the field. If we look a little bit going forward, the things that we are really excited about are continuing this journey to look at the opportunity to drive even stronger plant health, even stronger robustness in a world where we think there will be significantly more variation in weather. When we think about drought and precipitation, that is going to be key in our minds in the next couple of decades. We see it already. We see cases where drought stress, overwatering are really impacting plant health. We think microbes can really make a difference there to stabilize crops and ensure we get consistent and productive yield. So plant health continues to be a focus area. The other area that we're strongly focused on and which we believe is really going to be the next frontier is what we call biocontrol. The opportunity here is taking biological molecules, microbes, and replacing chemical pesticides. And the significance of that opportunity is not just about replacing, you could say, chemistry to get rid of fossil components. That's really a multifaceted opportunity to reduce carbon footprint, to improve biodiversity, to get more biodegradable components onto our agricultural fields so we don't leave persistent chemistry that pollutes the environment around us.
About an hour's drive south of Copenhagen, you can find the breeding station of a company where improving crop robustness and reliability has been the priority for the last 150 years. DLF is owned by Danish seed farmers. Its forage and turf seeds are bred to accommodate wide variations in soil and climate conditions in the temperate zones. As the market leader in its field, DLF sells its customized varieties to more than 100 countries. Here's Derek Bartlam, who is Chief Scientific Officer and Vice President.
So DLF is really well known for the forage, grass and clovers. So these are contribute to the food supply and the food system there. So when you're looking at pastures and when you're looking at fields, whether they are harvested mechanically for animal feed or whether they're used for grazing. So these pasture systems are what we're quite well known for. We're also very well known for our high quality turf grass that you see on sports fields. If you think of most famous sporting events that are played on grass, you're probably looking at our products. The most recent example is actually the Rugby World Cup, which just completed recently in France. And I can assure you that if there is any testing ground for proving that you have a grass that can stand up to strong beating and wear tolerance, it's a Rugby World Cup. And so most of those fields there were our grass.
Long-term climate trends have always been a core element in the DLF breeding program. Certainly on the forage side of the business, the need for a reliable, high-yield harvest is unchanged.
DLF's founded by farmers. And if there's anyone that knows about the year-to-year variation and the environmental and climate challenges, it's farmers themselves, and that no 2 years are exactly the same. So the focus on the environment and the climate and how do we ensure a robust crop across those multiple years is really been at the heart of our DNA from day one. One of the important things in the robustness is actually the resilience of the seed and the resilience of the crop against the changing climate. So one of our major focus is actually what you see more and more recently is drought and water supply. The very fact that we're working with grasses and clovers and perennial crops comes with an inherent sense of robustness already. The roots are a really critical, important component of that. So we do have research programs and collaborations focused on understanding the root systems, increasing the root depth, and how that contributes to that climate resilience.
Breeding takes place by natural selection. On a large and very windy field outside the breeding station, a patchwork of grass squares gives an idea of the vast gene pool that DLF works with.
So we have all these different varieties, and we look at them over a couple of years because how is it in drought? Well, something might be nice in drought or in summer, but if it dies in winter and doesn't survive to the next year, that's a problem. Or it might be really good in winter and things like that, but suffer from disease. So we really need to look at it. Because they're perennial growing over multiple years, we need to look at it under a lot of different conditions and really make sure it is the best product for the market.
So good deep root systems mean the plants are better able to take up water and nutrients from the soil during a drought and are more tolerant of flooding and other climate extremes. To speed up research into new climate-tolerant crops, DLF often partners with Danish universities and other companies. The world's most advanced root screening facility, called Radimax, at the University of Copenhagen, is the outcome of one such collaboration. But it's not all about equipping perennial crops to deal with the challenges of a changing climate. It's also about climate mitigation. Because when it comes to cutting farm emissions of greenhouse gases, forage grasses can play a critical role.
One area of emissions from agriculture is from excess nitrogen in the soil leading to nitrous oxide and some of the greenhouse gases there. Grasses are actually fantastic at absorbing such nitrogen, and thus the emissions from grass pastures is really low compared to other crop systems. So as long as the grasses are left there growing alone, maybe mechanically harvested, these emissions that are coming from those agricultural systems and from the soil are actually quite low, in addition to the constant roots growing there for the carbon capture. But when we have grazing livestock on the field, then that balance gets tipped a little bit. By including other species into the pasture, especially when grazing animals are filled, we can also have a great impact there. So one example is a herb, it's a plantain, we call it ecotane, which it gets introduced into the pasture systems that we've developed. And this has been externally verified to actually reduce nitrogen leaching by up to 60% from dairy farm pastures as well. So we're talking about the mixtures. So it's not just grass, but there's grass and legumes and clovers and some herbs that the animals also use for feed that we're putting in there as well. So these combinations contributes to an improved feed quality. So what is very well known is that if we can increase digestibility there and rate of passage, we're getting more energy out of the feed that's going into the animal. What that means, if we're getting more energy out of it, you're getting more milk. Or another way of putting it there is we're getting less methane per litre of milk that we can produce by improving the quality of our varieties.
Another partnership project that DLF is involved in is developing a platform for calculating and sharing greenhouse gas emissions data from the field. This promises to be an important tool for testing and comparing the performance of new seed varieties and other technologies. Just as it has always been at DLF, the mission is to keep on developing seeds that prepare farmers for the future.
The plant breeding process is not a quick process. It's 10 to 15 years. which means that what our breeders are doing today or starting today is not for the field that exists today, it's for a field that exists in 15 years' time. So we do remain acutely aware of what that field could look like to make sure we're developing the right products. At the same time, you never know exactly what's coming. So one of the things that we do rely on is the variation in our breeding process as well, so that we can quickly adapt our varieties to the changes that may come for us as well. We don't focus just on one solution. I am really excited, not only about DLF as a company, but also about our products, because I truly believe that we are part of the climate solution when it comes to agriculture food production.
Wherever there are crops and livestock, there are always residues, whether they're straw, leaves, or manure. Young biotech enterprise Steesdale is well on the way with a game-changing technology that uses those residues to capture carbon and put it back in the soil. The big idea is to transform agriculture from climate liability to climate asset. The technology is called Steesdale SkyClean, and it's all about a pyrolysis process that turns organic waste from agriculture and forestry into biochar. Peter Nicholson heads up the SkyClean business.
The basic thoughts around the SkyClean was partly to find a cheap way of removing CO2 from the atmosphere, and partly to have a technology which can support the green transition in the agricultural sector. One of the challenges with the agricultural sector is that in order to grow plants, etc., you do get certain emissions, for instance, from NO2, which are impossible to actually fully avoid. So there is a need to have a compensation. In other words, the agricultural sector need to be able to store carbon in order to compensate for some of the emission from having the soil activity and grow a crop.
The seasoned entrepreneurs behind Steesdale have worked with the green transition all their careers, first in the Danish wind power industry. With SkyClean, they have created twin opportunities for carbon capture in the soil and a new source of sustainable energy. Both opportunities are being tested in Skive, central Jutland, where a 2-megawatt pilot pyrolysis facility is located at GreenLab, which is an industrial park dedicated to companies that work with the green transition. Local farmers supply the facility with agricultural waste products, straw in particular.
The nature of the pyrolysis is that it can basically capture part of the carbon from the biomass and convert that into a very, very stable carbon, which can actually be spread, for instance, in the crop fields and basically be laying on the ground for even hundreds or thousands of years without being converted back to CO2. That's sort of the unique part of the pyrolysis. And basically, we convert the carbon to the same stability as, for instance, coal, which has been subject to pressure, heat, deep in the ground for millions of years. Where we are now here in Skive, we have a biogas plant next door, about 100 meters away. They are using heat for cleaning the biogas to remove CO2 from the biogas so it becomes biomethane, which can go into the gas grid. And there we are selling the heat to the biogas plant.
The next big step for Steesdale SkyClean is the completion of a 20-megawatt plant in the north of the country. The plan is to have around 80 plants at this size in operation by 2030. Their biochar production combined could reduce greenhouse gas emissions from Danish agriculture by 2 million tons a year.
We have looked very much into having something which can be scaled in a fast and efficient way. And the 20 megawatt unit, which we believe would be a commercial size, would handle 40,000 ton dry matter feedstock every year. And we do believe that that would be the size which is needed for rolling this out in big scale. And we do see that the pyrolysis would actually fit all over the globe. It can use, I would say, any kind of feedstock. It can use residues from the crops. It can use wood. The philosophy is that we are using pure waste products, and the plant in the northern part of Jutland is actually using biogas residues. So there we are basically dealing with a waste product of a waste product of a waste product, and thereby the pyrolysis is basically cleaning up at the end of the food chain.
What's interesting about Stiesdal SkyClean is that its biochar is actually not for sale. Instead, it is returned to the farmers who provided the feedstock for spreading on the fields. The commercial potential lies in the sale of verified European biochar certificates. And the first certificate has already been sold.
The business model around the biochar is that the value is basically the value of being able to store carbon. The first certificate we have sold is for an aviation company in Switzerland. And together with the certificate, there is also a certification that this biochar is actually disposed on a specific field in Denmark. What is important for selling a certificate is, of course, a calculation of what is the carbon capture per ton, and the European biochar certificate have a framework which can calculate that. In addition, it needs to be permanent, and the way to make it permanent is basically to spread it into a field, because then you cannot pick it up again.
Of course, that means the biochar brings a lot of value to the soil and the crops that grow in it by improving nutrient availability and moisture retention. Stiesdal SkyClean is involved in collaborative research to map the full impact, working with the Danish agricultural specialists at Seegers Innovation, universities and many other partners.
We are running a fairly big project called the Scale-Up project for the time being, and that is partly to build the 20 megawatt unit, but that also covers about 10 different sub-projects. Some is looking into how quickly can the plants actually take the phosphorus from the biochar. Some is looking into what kind of effect, if any, would it have on the microorganism. Some is looking into the insect, etc. So that is something which are being reported over the next coming years. We're also looking into how could the primary farmers get some value out of this. That's also important, that we have a motivation from the farmers which are supplying the feedstock, and thereby we also see that the feedstock would get much more value in the future than what it has had in the past, where it was deemed as a waste product.
There's no question that circular strategies can do a lot to reduce the climate footprint of farming. But despite the opportunities they create for more sustainable food production, there are still those who argue that there is just too little land to produce enough crops and livestock to meet the world population's growing need for nutrition, especially protein. This is why Novozymes has been working on a new radical approach to climate-neutral protein production. Just like all their enzymes and microbial products, it's done in a fermentation tank. Here's Hans Klingenberg again.
If you just look at the world as a whole, then we roughly use about half of all the arable land today just for agriculture. So if you then think about the fact that 80% of all the land we use for agriculture today is essentially all for animal farming, and that animal farming, despite using 80% land, only generates 20% calories, that doesn't really make up a very strong equation, right? So animals, in effect, are really not a very, very smart way to make protein if you want a lot of it for people. Microbes are actually an amazing way to produce protein. They don't need a lot of light. They don't need a lot of sugar or energy. They're very strong and good at producing a pretty nutritious mix. And if you translate that into a larger scale, into what we call precision fermentation, you can start thinking about producing a microbe-based protein source that could substantially replace the meat-based industry that we see today. You know, we are not suggesting that we will never see animal farming ever again. I think there's absolutely a place for animal farming. I think what we're suggesting is that we need to rethink how we produce the products that we eat. And we also need to be able to do that in a much more sustainable way. And the nice thing about microbes is that you can reduce water consumption by 90%. you can reduce CO2 emissions by 90%. You can reduce the land footprint by 90%. We're just taking something that nature already makes today, and we're scaling that. It's 100% from nature. It'll, when we put back whatever's left from the fermentation, go immediately back to nature, be broken down. And so it really creates this nice circularity that I think we're all seeking in a forward system that's more sustainable.
Novozymes has invested $300 million in a new production line dedicated to advanced proteins. It's one of many investments by Denmark-based companies in a world that has an urgent need for climate-neutral food systems. While taking the greenhouse gases out of agriculture has to be a global effort, Danish innovation can perhaps help to make a long journey shorter. That brings us to the end of this episode of the Food Nation podcast. Thanks to Hans, Derek and Peter for joining us this time. If you'd like more information about how the Danish food and agriculture sector is tackling today's global challenges, you're always welcome to contact the team at Food Nation Denmark or visit the website at foodnationdenmark.com. You can also find all the other episodes of our podcast on your favourite podcast app. Thanks for listening.